So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm Reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe.
I'm senior editor Devinder Hardawar.
Today, we are talking all about our review of the Google Nest Hub, taking you a little bit behind the scenes, how that came to be, some of the funny, creepier stories around it. And our UK Bureau Chief Matt Smith will be joining us to talk about that. But it isn't just about the Nest Hub. Google had a slew of news, as well as Xiaomi, which unveiled its first real foldable this week too. So plenty of news to go around. But before we get to all that, if you're liking the show, please leave us a rating on iTunes. It'll really help people discover us. Subscribe on any podcast platform you like. And we also live stream the recording of this show every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern thereabouts on the Engadget YouTube channel. So head on over there and join us. It's a fun little crew. So this week, I finally managed to publish my review of the Google Nest Hub, which is Google's new smart display that uses a radar sensor to detect motion to see if you're asleep or not. And I'm sure we have a lot of questions, but there's also a lot of funny stories in the behind the scenes. So I also had the help of UK Bureau Chief Matt Smith throughout the review process, because he also had a review unit and was giving me feedback as we went along. So without further ado, hey Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Hey guys, I'm glad you fixed all your technical problems. I think it was probably me.
Normally funny get blamed how it just shows things. Up when Matt appears.
Yeah, well, maybe is it the time zone difference?
It's across the pond delay. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
not a pond de replay, but pond delay. Anyway,
I'm just gonna go, guys. I'm just gonna leave this podcast in the first minute.
Okay, Matt, you and I got the Google Nest Hub into test, and we've been playing with it for about a week. Tell me what you first thought of the Nest Hub's sleep tracking when you heard about it.
So I recall like seeing the post about it coming and being teased as a new home hub. And in fact, like Google UK got in touch with me months ago to kind of tease what's your address? We have some hardware to send to you. And I'm like, what is it? Why?
Yeah.
And I think I asked you, Cher, and you were like, well, the last thing was like, I think it was Wi-Fi routers. And I was like, well, I don't need them. Anyway, I kept like saying, so what is it? And they're like, oh, sorry, we can't tell you yet. Sorry, we can't tell you that. So I think this is like a device.
Oh, it might have been the thermostat too.
Something like that. It was something like really not in my purview or nothing really I cared about. But it turned out to be this home hub. And like when I got it out of the box, when it first landed here, the first thing I looked for, oddly enough, was the camera, because I have the big model, the Mac. Is it the Mac?
Yes, Nest Hub Max.
So it has a camera, so you can do your Google Duo calls, Hangouts, video calls through it, and all these other cool things. So it's like, oh, where's the camera? And then I realized this is the kind of smaller, cheaper version. So that was my initial impression. I mean, it looks like all the other home hubs, doesn't it? They haven't made any major changes to the design at all. And then I read up on it, and yeah, it's all about the sleep tracking. It's about the Soli sensor, which I think it launched in a Pixel phone, didn't it, a few years ago? That was when it was first appeared for gesture controls. And now they're using it to aim it at your bed at a creepy angle and track your sleep.
So just to catch everyone up, or as a reminder, the Nest Hub, like Matt said, is the smaller of Google's smart displays. So it's got like a 7-inch screen. It's teeny tiny. It's meant for intimate spaces like the bedroom. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have a camera, and there's a microphone kill switch, just in case you don't want any sounds being picked up. As opposed to the Nest Hub Max, which is really meant for more communal spaces like living rooms, kitchens. So it does have a camera for video calls and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the Nest Hub second gen launched with a new feature called sleep sensing, and it's powered by the Soli radar sensor that, like Matt pointed out, first launched mainstream, I guess, in the Pixel 4. But Soli was always kind of a project under Google's ATAP, which is the Advanced Technology and Something Division. I want to say projects, but I can't remember the full acronym.
Probably projects, yeah.
Projects, yeah. So ATAP division, and basically uses radar to detect very minute movements. Mm-hmm. On the Pixel 4 was things like you can turn your hands like you're adjusting a fake knob in the air and adjust the volume. Or later on, it rolled out in the Nest thermostat, and it was used to like detect presence in a room, human presence in a room. So, and I know Devendra has had some experience with that. Yeah. You liked
it, right?
I have
two of the new cheaper Nest thermostats, and it's helpful to have that thing pop up whenever I walk by. So it's useful in that respect, yeah.
Matt, I know you were trying to get out of doing any work at all with the smart display.
Hey, I flagged it with you guys. I flagged it. And like a little bit inside baseball here, when me and Cher get sent like the same devices, I'm always there to flag it and say, hey, Cher, is there anything I can do to make your job easier? Uh-huh. And she's like, no, I'll do it. It'll arrive a day before the embargo breaks, but I'll do it because I just want to do it. And I'm just a really performative employee, and I just must show everyone that I'm working really hard on this device. So don't worry, I've got it all. And for this, so this was the rare occasion where she actually doubled back and actually asked for some feedback and some help.
She's like, ask for your help.
Oh, look, you set this. You probably should share this up, Sherlyn. Why did you come to me for my impressions on the hub?
So you were like, hey, I have one too. Yeah, happy to. You know, you also pointed out that you had a hard time setting it up next to your bed. So one of the first things I had a problem with the Nest Hub was finding a spot next to my bed to place it. I thought I was going to use the window ledge next to my bed, but I sleep on a low platform. Not ideal. I don't actually like sleeping so low. It's not by choice, not because my last name's low.
Well, but let's admit it, you sleep on the floor, Sherlyn. Like I, you
basically
know,
like a tatami. Yeah, like yeah. Anyway, so I had trouble finding something that was mattress height. Like this thing needs to be set up on something exactly mattress height. I didn't have something. Matt also said you didn't have something, correct? That was like part of your bedroom.
Yeah, so I have a little like weird kind of bureau pegboard thing that I can hang kind of small objects. It's got a small shelf, but you know the hub is small, but it's not tiny. You need like a substantial base to be able to kind of position it diagonally to kind of aim at your bed.
Yeah, I mean, so that was good to feel like justified about, because I thought I was just this one weirdo that didn't have like a good nightstand and everything, but. Mm-hmm. I think most people who are more adult have one, like a proper nightstand.
Like
so you won't have that issue.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But for me, yeah, exactly. So for me, once I like realized I wasn't alone, I was like, okay, I'll point this out in the review. That was nice to have Matt there kind of back me up. But the main reason afterwards that I came to Matt is after he started sharing some of his like sleep info with me earlier, I was like, my first sleep profile started coming through and it was not registering. It's supposed to tell you how long you've been asleep, whether you were restless, and also throughout the night, whether there were changes in the light and temperature around you. Also sounds, it's listening for things like coughing and snoring, which we'll get to the whys of it in a little bit. But I looked at my results and I think for the first two nights, there was just nothing registered in terms of sound. So it's like, is this thing even working? Is this thing on? It just turns out I'm like the most quiet sleeper ever. And
sorry, for the sake of the podcast, I'm just shaking my head and rolling my eyes. So it just turns out I'm the prettiest, most quiet sleeper. I don't know.
According like to little butterfly. Yeah.
Well known in my family for being the perfect sleeper, just so you know. Because my aunt, who's a very picky sleeper, whenever we used to travel, would choose to room with me because she's like, this B-word is silent as hell. She
a
like
corpse.
A corpse.
Yeah.
Exactly.
My niece,
exactly.
The corpse.
That's true. Yeah. It's actually, yes. I can probably confirm this because I also remember from our flights to Computex.
Oh, right.
I would always walk by and Trillin's just like in the weirdest
passed
position,
out.
But passed
just
out.
Dracula.
Yeah,
just Dracula-ing in the back, yeah.
So she's totally getting... Let's backtrack a little, guys. So this is a normal Google Nest, right? Like it does all the normal stuff a Nest does. It's just a Nest with this weird sleep tracking thing, right?
It's by and large the same thing. There are like some improvements.
Audio's better.
Yeah, the audio, that's exactly the thing I was going to bring up. Like it sounds a lot better. Like
good.
Yeah.
Even like watching, because you can stream video services to it, so you can stream your Netflix, YouTube, the rest of it. And yet the sound is like nice enough to actually casually watch a show on it, like a short enough show anyway. And that was a pleasant surprise, because it's cheaper. Mm. It's cheaper than the old one.
It is, exactly, exactly. It's $50 cheaper than the original, which cost $150 at the time. So now the new Nest Hub is $100, which is nice.
That's within like basically, hey, I'll buy this and play around with it territory. Yeah. You know, it's like almost an impulse buy. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to be nitpicky about it, it's $99.99. So it's like under $100 technically, but by the time you add taxes and crap, it's
so we talked about this, by the way, when you first announced this creepy-ass device.
When I first announced it.
Yeah, when you talked about it.
When I first shared it with you, yeah.
But I'm wondering, what do you guys think? How is it different than other sleep tracking things we've seen? There have been wearables. There have been all sorts of things. At one point, I tested something that like slipped under my mattress.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of detected movement and stuff like that. Yeah.
I haven't had a lot of experience with mattress sensors. Just don't generally like those, or don't have the like outlets for so many plugs and stuff. So that's the one downside of another smart display in the bedroom is like you need another outlet if you don't already have one.
Yeah.
It's also giving you different types of insight. The smart display is really about the environments in your bedroom when you're going to bed and what you can do to change that to get you into a more, I guess, consistent and peaceful resting routine. So if you're like me, I occasionally have the TV on when I go to sleep. I leave it to turn itself off overnight, or I have the speaker on. And that's really what the smart display or the Nest Hub is helpful for in terms of like its sleep tracking. But when it's wearables, right? A lot of them, sorry, Apple Watch fans, but most of them now use the heart rate sensor to track what sleep zone you're in.
Sure.
So you can see when you wake up that you spent like maybe an hour or two in REM sleep, a few in deep restorative sleep, a few in like just, you know, awake and whatever. So I find that to be more insightful, even though it's less like something that I can do anything about, you know?
Did you actually get any sleep data, by the way, Shirley? I'm just wondering. Like, it was hard. Okay, so you got something. Okay.
So, yeah.
Matt, you got some stuff, too.
Yeah, I come from a little bit of a different perspective because I'm okay. I'm happy to wear my Apple Watch when I go to sleep. So I get what the Apple Watch tracks while I sleep, and that's often heart rates. It does. I don't think it doesn't silo it, like Cher was saying. It doesn't silo it into REM sleep and the rest of it.
Yeah.
But you do see, you know, the plateauing and the peaking of your heart rate, that kind of thing. So you can see where you woke up or when you were getting really deep, you know, really falling into that sleepy coma. So that was cool to see. So like with what I was surprised with Google is that I don't use Google's health and fitness tracking apps. I have some Android phones, but I mostly use an iPhone. So I installed the app on my iPhone just to kind of see what I was gleaning from this hub. And it all just kind of effortlessly flowed in. You can kind of like knit together Google. Is it called Google Fitness or
Fit.
Google? Yeah, Google
Fit. It's Fit.
So you can kind of knit together Google Fit with Apple's health kind of webkit and the rest of it. And it kind of just like shares all the data between the two. And so it was quite elegant in that it just kind of pulled all of my like Apple Watch workouts in with all these kind of metrics about sleeping. So this is the story we were meant to hit on at the start, but we completely failed to. Cher was saying like, oh yeah, it's weird. It's like it doesn't pick up any snoring. And
I'm just too perfect.
Obviously I don't because I'm perfect in every way. But what about you, Matt? What about you, Matt? And I'm like, seriously, this thing says I snored half the night. It's just like...
48 minutes.
Yeah, 48 minutes, one night of just orange dots or orange zones of me.
That's
just
not
kind
too
of
bad. Oh,
inhaling
man.
like some kind of anime enemy, just inhaling the cosmos.
Have you guys ever used the snoring tracking apps, because it's something I've played around with too? There are a whole bunch of those where you just leave the app running, you know?
Yeah, like leave your phone face down with a mic on. Yeah, that kind of thing. But that was more for sleep tracking than snoring. Like with my exes in the past, I've always denied that I snore, and they
snore.
The horror is I've now got this like factual evidence that not only do I snore, I snore quite a lot.
Oh, yeah. I'm right there with you.
I'm very lucky to not only be a non-snorer, but also the deepest sleeper. So I do not give a crap if like my partner is snoring throughout the night. Like
that's
I will
perfect.
Pass out so hard. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So you can snore all you want, friend. I was gonna say bitch, but yeah.
Let's be nice. Let's be nice. Come on.
Yeah.
My question for you guys, by the way, did you feel weird with this thing watching you? Because it's not like a device that you're wearing, right? It's not like something you necessarily control. It is there staring at you.
But it hasn't got eyes.
With a sensor. It doesn't have eyes, but...
Exactly.
Listen, what are eyes? What are eyes, you know, but...
Cameras.
But sensors for, you know, light reactions. It sees in other ways, like other animals. Does it feel weird to you?
Matt, you go first, because I'm...
I mean, not at all for me. Yeah, I just took it as... It's almost like a heat map. That's how I kind of imagined it in my brain. You know, it's like I'm just walking past this heat mapping thing, like I'm in an airport or something. My main complaint with these, with all the sleep tracking stuff, is like none of this is going to solve your sleep problems. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. Like Cher kind of said earlier, like it can tell you to go to bed at the same time. It can tell you to be on your phone less. I mean, there's huge irony in telling you to be on your phone less
and
then installing
a
bigger screen next to you that's louder and plugged into power at all times. But it's all down to you to kind of solve your sleep problems. Like, there was no insight. Like, sure, it's giving you all these facts, but there's no insight here. There's nothing that can go, oh, that's why I don't sleep well. I snore. Because it's not going to solve your snore problems. It's not going to solve the fact that Sherlyn goes to bed really late and only sleeps 5 hours, and that's because she's dead inside. It's not going to solve that problem either, you know.
I try. Look, one of the things I really wanted the Nest Hub to help with, to Matt's point, is to fix my delayed circadian rhythm. I self-diagnosed that I have DSW, which is delayed sleep-wake phase, which means I basically just go to bed. Like, I fall asleep a lot later than everyone else, despite my best efforts. Like, I used the Nest Hub to prove that I was in bed at, like, midnight or even before midnight. I got to bed on time. I still passed out only at 3 a.m. Like, it just... Wow. It's something I struggle with. So if anything, the Nest Hub was good at helping me prove that, but it doesn't really help yet with the stuff that I need help with, just like trying to sleep earlier or trying to fall asleep earlier. That's the stuff that I need to drink something for.
Right. I mean, I still go to bed, like, not that late, but late enough. I mean, me and Cher both live alone, so we can just... We're just like giant petulant toddlers. We can do what we want with our lives. Sorry. Well, I'm the same. We're in the same boat. But
you do whatever you want.
Right, but like when...
Yes, exactly.
When these kind of like... when everyone discovered we were using our phones too much, Google and Apple kind of went back into their, you know, mobile OSs and added all this kind of, you know, these hygiene features for like get off your phone less, time to go to bed. And we, you know, we all turn those on, but that hasn't changed when I go to sleep. That hasn't improved my sleep at all.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's down to you.
It's
stuff that you already know, like go to bed earlier. You know, turn off your computer, turn off the lights. Like, it's stuff you already know. That's where it's... But to answer your question earlier, though, Dev, I didn't feel it was creepy because once I started seeing the reports come through and I realized that it was, like, very anonymous. Like, look, whatever the raw data is that the sensor sees, that's parsed on device. And then what Google then gets to present to you in the Fit app is the amount of time you've been asleep, whether you're restless, so things that have already been interpreted. And that stuff that I ended up seeing on the app, I really couldn't care less if someone saw it and knew that it was me. Like, yes, of course, I fell asleep at 3 a.m. I'm sorry. But like everything else, the creepiness of it, it did feel a little bit weird, like maybe the first two nights where I was like, am I going to be very still? And then like when you're aware that you can't move as you normally would, or you don't want to move as you normally would in bed, then you will definitely have trouble falling asleep because you're like not comfortable.
After
a while though, like I forgot it was there. Right now I've kind of just moved it a little bit out of the way. It's still tracking, which is nice. It's not pointed directly in my face, but it's still tracking it. It still works.
I kind of wish Google went all the way, though, and just was, like, really funny and creepy
camera
with it. Like, just now, just like a creeper that whispers to you at night.
Oh,
like,
oh yeah.
Go back to sleep.
Yeah. I'm watching you.
You shouldn't have drank so much water last night.
So, a delicate question for both of you, but
have
you had any experience of it potentially tracking multiple people? And how does it distinguish you versus... other people?
I'm so sorry. In the last week, I have had no power to make people sleep over. I'm so sad. I'm so sorry.
I try
to pretend like
we're in the middle of a pandemic. It's okay.
I've only met one human being this year so far in real life. Exactly. I've only met one other human being, and they did not sleep in my bed. They signed.
I'm also more likely to sleep over at other people's places.
This is actually a good year for Google to launch this, by the way, because. I'm sure everything falls apart with multiple people, right? Like, I'm sure if it could barely detect you, Sherlyn, with as a light sleeper, I'm sure exactly. Like their algorithms have no idea what to do when there are multiple people.
I was just going to say I do have a body pillow, like
doesn't
a big
count.
Body.
Your
pillow.
Your waifu doesn't
and
count.
It doesn't move.
Your waifu,
right,
please.
Right, my
anime
my
waifu
baby.
Pillow.
Doesn't. Yeah. but no, I mean, that's a good test, but Google has or says it's built in, like, I guess, precautions. I'm not sure. Or the algorithm is designed in such a way that it's only meant to detect one person at once. Mm-hmm. So I haven't tested it with, I should have tested it with Brian when we were shooting a review video, but neither
force
of us.
Him to force him to have a slumber party with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Just lay here. Just lay here. Brian.
It's,
big spoon,
yeah, it's like
spoon.
Sleeping on the jaw, basically. Like, cause you have to sleep for at least 20 minutes before
Chef,
the sensor will
Chef,
start.
Seriously. We do not
we
pay Brian
that.
Enough.
It's
to
true.
Make him suffer.
We
that.
Already subject him to my presence
Shout
way
out
too much.
To Brian O, our tireless New York video dude. Does this thing record audio, by the way, guys? I forget if you mentioned that. Like, do you get any record of anything? Snoring?
No sleep talking.
No
things.
Recordings.
I assume okay. That's where, but I'm sure the mic is picking up the snore.
Yeah.
That's, must
yeah.
be where it gets that from. One thing about this that we haven't really touched on the hub, because Google, I think we're intentionally vague. Is that all the sleep tracking is just kind of in a beta mode because it's going to be kind yeah. of folded in to a premium subscription fit health mm-hmm. bundle of some sort so that we don't exactly mm-hmm. know. In fact, I think there was might be even more on my, should I go get my box, my hub? Because it does
sure.
do
kind
it,
of word
it.
It better.
Go One for sec. It. I can talk while you're gone because I still have some thoughts. Now, I felt really bad because when you're setting up the smart display, it is a smart display. It's got to show things, right? So most people, I think, choose to rotate a carousel of pictures of their friends and family. And as I was setting this up, Google's like, hey, do you want to generate an album with faces of people that you know?
You're like, no,
you know,
I don't want
to
see
no,
those.
No, no, no. I was like, yes, but because I knew this was a review device that was going to get shot in a video, I was mm-hmm. like, okay, let's be careful about who I include in this. So I put mostly pictures of myself mm-hmm. on the screen.
That sounds about right. And that actually checks out for what I'd imagine you put in your photo albums.
So it was just a steady stream of selfies on this display. And mm-hmm. during the review video, Matt, we're talking about the steady selfie stream.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and, I've got a count if you want a count.
Oh my God, you counted?
At least
oh
32 different selfie pictures. So oh tragic. And I only saw like one or two of your friends. One or two.
Because the way I had it set up was it was an album of pictures with my face recognized in it. So
I know, but
I
it said, no, I saw it said Sherlyn and friends, but there's literally only one or two other people. That
the one other person was like my mom or something.
It
like,
was everybody
like,
except
was...
Matt Smith. I think that was it.
I mean, that's what I'm mostly outraged about, yeah.
It was pictures of Brian also in there. But lovely. Yeah, so apologies to anyone who was subject to that in the review video.
Oh, man, I love it. It was a good video, guys. Like, one thing, you. Okay, so you get a box, Matt. What do we have here?
So I'm trying to, I swear they said something like, you know, Fitbit Plus or something, but I'm wondering why I read that now. Like, it's just like, warning, subscription may be required. The Nest Hub's sleep sensing features require a subscription sold separately and are subject to your permissions and settings. They use blah, 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 blah. Google Fit and other apps may be required for full functionality.
Is that, so is it free for now, but they'll start charging later if you buy this thing? That
sucks.
So they
plan...
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, all Nest Hub users will get sleep sensing as a free preview for a year, is what Google is saying. They have no details yet on how much it'll cost after.
I hate
still
this.
Still ironing that out. Yeah. And I mean, flat out, me and Matt both agree that there's not enough value yet for them mm-hmm. to want to charge extra for this.
It's a sneaky thing to kind of put in there and be like, hey, this has sleep sensing, but in a year, we will start charging you for it. Like it's, I don't know, like a cable company discount or something, right?
Or
you'll be paying
like they've got you
then.
Over a barrel already. Like, we know how you sleep, so now, you know, we're holding it hostage.
Otherwise, we will release this information publicly.
all these radar images of you.
Which I've already done on this
you.
Podcast.
Last question for you guys. We talked a bit about this, I think, last week, Sherlyn, but Made for Love, the new HBO show, has some great sequences about our lives being a little overly monitored, overly, you know, computerized. There's a great sequence in that first episode where a pop-up appears and forces our main character to rate her orgasm, which is being monitored by all her bedroom sensors. Does it start to feel like, to you guys, like we're getting to the point where things are being monitored too much? You know, like, could this lead to anything bad or lead to other devices that we open up too much to?
Matt, do you want to go first?
Well, yeah, I'm the orgasm expert on this show, so
I don't think so.
Oi. I think my perspective on this has always been like you'll monitor as much as you want to monitor. I'm sure like all of us have had to play with wearables at some point or other, or any kind of fitness or lifestyle tracker. And, you know, you pick and choose exactly what you like to use. Like the main thing I use, probably the most I've used across coming up to 10 years at Engadget, the thing I've used most is the Apple Watch's fitness tracking. So I like set an exercise or an activity going, and then I stop it when I finish. And that's something that I know how many calories I burn. I know how much my chest hurt. You know, it'll tell me my heart rate, that kind of thing. And it's kind of knowledgeable information. It feels and it kind of signifies to me that I've worked hard. And that's sort of like a habit forming thing that I've found is just really useful for me. But everyone's got, you know, to's and fro's, you know, like food tracking apps. That's one that's never stuck with me because you don't want to input.
Annoying. It's so tiring.
Yeah. And also, how do you put like, you know, I bit off a block of cheese. You don't want to put that in the app and you don't want to say that on a podcast, but here I am.
But like, you just did, yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is you want actually an implanted sensor that automatically tracks everything. The key is more sensors, everybody.
Automate me, yeah. Like, that kind of stuff would be great. I mean...
Automat!
What was that, sorry?
Automat. Automat.
Oh, I wish I didn't hear it.
Well, my answer is basically, yeah, it's all the same as Matt, basically down to choice. Thankfully, you still have the choice. And in Made for Love, she didn't have any choices really to be surveilled.
Exactly.
She was in a situation. But we thankfully still have the choice. It is when companies do things without our permission, without giving us the full transparency that it starts to get a little bit, very intrusive and invasive. Right now, I'm fine with it. Again, sleep sensing is an opt-in feature. You could still use the new Nest Hub and not use sleep sensing at all. And it's still a steal because it's still $50 cheaper.
Yeah.
So get it and don't use sleep sensing if you don't want to. And don't pay for the subscription if you don't want to. But as a proof of concept for technology, I was impressed. I mean, like, okay, who knew radar could tell if I was asleep? Although I do worry about like the long-term exposure to radar type things that some people ask about. And I'm not sure yet, but we'll see. I had fun like sleeping on the job really well.
I think like one of the things as well that I always come back to is you never see someone in, say, like men's health or women's health who have got like a kicking body because they wore their Fitbit every day. Like that's
other things.
What you're reaching for and what these kind of gadgets provide are two very different things.
So the Nest Hub review wasn't the only piece of news out of Google World this week. In fact, gosh, it's been like a big explosion of news out of Google. Starting with even before the Nest Hub review was out, there was an embargo, I guess, on that same day earlier in the morning. A bunch of Maps updates. Google Maps is continuing to get more tools and more things. Like, remember when they unveiled AR live view way back when? So about 2 years ago in 2019, you know, it showed a way you could use the phone's camera to point it around the world in front of you. And
it shows you directions.
Like arrows overlaid on the scene.
Yeah,
exactly. Telling you exactly where your destination is in front of you, which is really clever. So with this week's news, Maps is getting indoor live view. So indoor AR. So for example, you're in an airport, you can't find your gate, or you're in a mall and you can't find the restaurant that you want to go to and you're late for your reservation. This is going to be a really helpful tool. I was pretty stoked to see it. It's rolling out now to select malls in the US, in like some Westfield malls in some cities, and it's coming out globally soon, which is, I like it.
That's cool. It's a cool idea. I've never seen anybody actually use this feature in real life, but
me neither.
This would be fantastic in trade show halls though, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when you know when the numbers in the halls don't match up in, you know, with how they should be logically laid out. Yeah, all that stuff.
Yes.
This could just kind of take you exactly where you need to go. That'd be very cool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, airports sounds like the perfect place for this.
The perfect place. I've spent way too much time running around international airports. Germany's in particular have been nightmares for me. Sure, I'm down with this. This also seems like back, like just stuff to get ready for AR glasses. You know, like we're getting all this stuff.
Good point.
Yeah, like I don't want to hold up my phone and do this, but if I was just running down, you know, through gates and stuff and I got pop-up directions, that'd be perfect.
Yeah, think about this with 5G too, right? Because like processing and internet would be just a huge factor as to how well this works. So it would be nice to see all of this come through with that promise. Some other maps updates I'm going to quickly run through. A new focus on eco-friendly guidance. So a little bit of the redesign will show you when you're looking up navigation directions to a new destination, it will show you your favorite route. So for example, you're a big biker, it'll show you that at the top. So no longer are there going to be those tabs that differentiate car, transit, cab, and like, you know, biking. They're all going to be on one page now. Your favorite's going to be near the top. The people in that city's favorite is also going to be near the top too. So if you're in New York, the subway option is going to be higher up than, say, a car, than driving navigation directions. In Singapore, it might be the MRT, more than, say, taking a car as well, or biking. So that's one change. But the other change is that, like, when there is an eco-friendly your alternative available at about the same ETA. That's to say, like, that there's less of a carbon footprint in that route, that they're going to suggest, they're going to use that as a default when their ETA is about the same, which means you're going up slopes less, you're going to, you know, find more carbon, like low emission zones, that sort of thing.
Are they giving any carbon estimates for this? Because that would be cool too. Okay.
Absolutely. So if the eco-friendly route is going to take significantly longer than the fastest route, they will show you the CO2 output and let you compare the difference in taking the fastest route. So you decide whether you want the faster route or the eco-friendlier option, which is really pretty nice. And you can turn this all off if you don't like it in the settings. And I like this. I think it helps people make better decisions, make it easier. And then finally, the company is also going to integrate with some pickup and delivery services. So like specifically right now for on grocery retailers. So they'll start with Instacart and Albertsons companies in the US. It will show you things like the pickup and delivery windows, fees, and order minimums. But it's also launching a pilot program with Fred Meyer in some of the stores in Portland, Oregon, so that when you order something in the Fred Meyer app, you can actually go over to Google Maps and then share your location with the store when you're heading over to pick up your order. And then you can check in when you've arrived so they know to bring your stuff out to you to the curbside and stuff like that, which is actually pretty nice. It'll be nice to see if Google is able to bring this out on a much larger. Sorry, Matt, you're in the UK, so it doesn't sound like a lot of these are headed your way just yet.
We have our own problems to deal with at the moment.
I'm sorry. Other Google news. I'm going to try to run through things really quickly. So this one is noteworthy, but I don't think we need to spend too much time on it, which is this new experimental app called Stack. It's basically out of the Area 120 section of Google Land, like UFO land. And it's basically an app that lets you scan and categorize your documents. A lot of people had an issue with it when this was announced on our team, where they were like, oh God, it's going to like have more access to all my bills. And then, like for me, I already take a lot of photos of receipts with my with my app, with my camera. So like the fact that it can scan and recognize that this is a receipt, this is a bill, this is like your invoice, I think it's nice, but Stack is going to be a way for you to do that, and I wouldn't be surprised if they start integrating this into things like photos over time.
Yeah, Evernote has done this. A lot of note-taking apps have done this for a while, so nothing new, but useful for the Google interface.
It is scary to think that they might have more access to your stuff, but then, hey, don't download it if you don't like it.
Don't download it. They've got all your stuff in Gmail, unfortunately, so whatever of your bills go to Gmail. It's all there.
Exactly. big news in U.S. carrier land, though. T-Mobile announced this week it will make Google Messages the default messaging app on its phones.
Interesting.
If you remember from earlier this year, me and Chris Velasco talked to Android chief Hiroshi Lockheimer. This is something that they teased back when Samsung launched the Galaxy S21 this year. Samsung also said, hey, Google Messages will be our default messaging app in certain regions around the world. Now T-Mobile is saying in the U.S., you will get messages. The benefit of this is mm-hmm. that there's less fragmentation. RCS support comes through for more people. We want to see more US carriers do this. Mm-hmm. I think this is a big deal.
So RCS is the not SMS platform, right?
Right. Better... RCS is, mm-hmm. I believe it stands for Relay Chat Services. And it's basically like iMessage, right? It's like you can do things like react to messages or and reply to a specific
read
message.
Receipts, right? I think read receipts is
read
the big
receipts,
one.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
I've always tried to avoid any kind of RCS chat or investigation because I just find mm-hmm. it bores me to tears. But is this the equivalent of like iMessage then?
Mm-hmm. Yep. In yeah, basically. Well, I think equivalent is a sad word for it because sadly Android for some reason cannot match that experience. I will say I've been using messages for the longest time and iMessage always just seems more mm-hmm. engaging. You know, everything looks mm-hmm. more like a proper chat app, whereas messages still looks like SMS.
And iMessage is more secure and everything too, right? It's encrypted and all that stuff is good. Like, it's hard to wrangle.
Apple stuff, yeah.
Yeah, Apple stuff. I am interested when iMessage starts to play nicely with RCS. I don't know how that's working.
Yeah, that would be good.
It still looks really awkward when I message my friends who use Apple. Haha, shout out to all of you who I hate. But it's
how
just
you
looks
recruited
really
your friends.
Weird.
Also, judging from your Google Photos album on your Hub review, yeah, all two friends.
All two of my friends who use iMessage to chat with me on SMS, like whenever they hit like react to one of my green bubble messages, it shows up as this really awkward thing. It's like not a very integrated, seamlessly blended in animation or whatever. It's like second message, Candace, not a real name of any friend I have, but Candace reacted heart to your message. Like that's what you get. And I'm just like, oh, it's painful. It's very mm-hmm. painful. So we'll see. Hopefully they bring the two worlds together soon. Back to Google really quick. Devendra, you covered this week. Do you want to talk about Google's Flock trials and the Swan alternative being proposed by someone?
I mean, real quick, because there's just so much stuff here. But we have talked about Google having a replacement for third-party cookies when it comes to tracking ads, and that is what they're calling Flock. Basically, it's going to group people together in groups or cohorts and based on certain preferences and things they like. So people who like one type of band or one type of food or something will be grouped together anonymously. Google's starting to test that out, so I think that's pretty cool. But I also wrote up this news about Swan, another like alternative. I don't even know what the actual thing stands for, but it is an alternative approach to not using third-party cookies anymore from ad companies. And you know, it sounds like it is more of an opt-in thing. It is kind of like a central registry where if you go to a Swan site, you'll I think be asked to enable or join this thing. You can have them deliver personalized ads if you want, or you could do it in other ways. So it's giving you more direct control over the ads. We're going to see a lot of this stuff. You know, we're going to see like a couple different ways of dealing with it because Google's is phasing out third-party cookies. Privacy is more important now. So the way we handle ad tracking and, you know, data tracking for ads is going to be changing. So this is we have mm-hmm. two new approaches that we'll see within this year. And I'll be interested to see how they work out. Yeah.
Quick shout, because I've been looking into this a little bit. Flock is one of the proposals. Mm-hmm. Swan is another one, right? The other proposal names, just so you know, they are Parakeet, Turtle Dove, and Pigeon. Just so you know.
Okay.
It's all bird themed right now.
Okay.
Well, why? Can someone give me the why? Why is it birds?
No. Stay tuned for my expose.
It's ad town, baby.
Is it because birds like cookies? They eat cookies and crumbs and
bird droppings. I don't know.
Okay. No good reason.
I will figure it out and let you know.
Yeah. Let's go straight to Xiaomi.
So it wasn't just Google that had a lot of news this week. Xiaomi, which is a Chinese phone making company, also had like a big week. All right. First, mm-hmm. it had a 2-day keynote event this week where it unveiled a bunch of phones. Let's start with the most interesting one, the Mi Mix Fold. It is Xiaomi's first real foldable phone. And it basically is different from the prototype that the company had already shown us in 2019 and actually folds in on itself this time. as opposed to outwards like before. So this is kind of similar to the Galaxy Z Fold 2 that Samsung unveiled or Samsung makes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it folds inside. It's got an 8-inch AMOLED, which folds in on itself. And then on the outside, it's got kind of a 6.5, get the 5-2. Number. 6.52-inch long, narrow screen on the outside. So again, very, very similar to Galaxy Z Fold 2. But let's not forget, it's got a punch hole selfie camera up top on the front, 20 megapixel sharp, and a triple camera system on the back, starting with a 108 megapixel main sensor, accompanied with a 30 megapixel ultra wide, and a new thing
Xiaomi is calling its
bionic camera. A bionic camera, because mm-hmm. Xiaomi cannot stop copying Apple's phrasing. But what the bionic camera,
yeah.
Right, the whole aesthetic was Apple to begin with. But anyway, the reason this camera is bionic is because it comes with a liquid lens. So instead of glass, it's liquid. And there's a motor that, according to Xiaomi, precisely manipulates a packet of fluid to switch between telephoto mode, which is offering 3x optical or 30x hybrid zoom, and macro mode, which lets you get close up to 3 centimeters.
Mm-hmm.
And then this liquid is supposed to be, you know, good enough to survive temperatures like negative 40 degrees Celsius, which is way below freezing, and also negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit, same. And then it goes all the way up to 60 degrees Celsius, which is not boiling, which is great. And that's, for the American listeners out there, 140 degrees Fahrenheit.
It seems like they are begging, like, have we seen this kind of tech in a phone camera before? It is
not yet.
This is the sort of thing that is a red flag to me of like, hey, we invented this whole new thing, you know, kind of to make camera zooms possible. This is going to break. This is not going to last a year of use or something.
Yeah, this goes in the same bucket as, you know, those motorized pop-up cameras that we don't see anymore, which, you know, sound cool, look cool, but it's another thing to break. Having said that, like, the theory of it, or like how my imagination runs with it, is the idea that you could have this one single aperture that could kind of do all these multitasking. I mean, it kind of speaks volumes that so that kind of cool bionic lens is only for a single camera sensor, the 8-megapixel one. So that's like the most flattering one to kind of, you know, average lens quality, because there's less megapixels. There's, you know, aberrations and the rest of it hopefully won't get picked up as easily.
Yeah, it's the most forgiving. Yeah.
Exactly. But the idea, like, if you could get this kind of fluid lens that could be your macro, it could be your telephoto, it could be your ultra wide, it could be whatever you want, darling, in this one single lens. Now, that's exciting, and that could be thrilling if it works and if it doesn't break and if, you know.
You know what? This is giving me an idea. Instead of using liquid, they should just be using ultra-thin glass, which is Samsung's glass it uses on the Galaxy Z Flip. A sort of glass that can sort of bend, but then we need to figure out how they're going to figure out how to bend it and that sort of thing. Maybe they're going to work on glass instead of liquid. Anyhow, I'm not a material scientist. This is really up to
Xiaomi. Kind of revealed that there.
Wow. We'll see. Maybe they'll start playing with glass. Who knows? But the other thing that stands out about the Mi Mix Fold is its price, right? It starts at 9,999 yuan, which is about $1,520. That is $500 cheaper than the Galaxy Z Fold 2. It's nice to see. It's never going to come to the US, I don't think, because it's retailing only in China for now. So sorry for those of you who are eager to get your hands on it.
Do we know when this is going to arrive too? Because I feel like the Z Fold 2 can drop in price. That thing was announced a while ago.
Oh, true.
Just recently, today, I think. Let me just find it. I think it's literally dropped by like maybe $500 very recently.
I wonder why. Yeah.
One second. Let me see if I can find it.
While you look for that too, I want to like let people know what you get for that price. You're also getting at the base model 12 gigs of RAM, and you can go up to 16 gigs of RAM, 512 gigs of storage on the Mi Mix Fold with a Snapdragon 888 5G processor. So that's really nice, honestly. Xiaomi does this, right? A lot of Chinese phone companies do this. They just stuff something full of the highest end specs.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know.
Okay, so here's I've got my update. So it's good news. So apparently, yes, Samsung has permanently lowered the price of the Galaxy Z Fold 2 by about £500. Mm-hmm. The bad news is it's in South Korea.
You mean the price drop is only in South Korea, or the phone is only in South Korea?
At the moment, it's mm-hmm. only a price drop in South Korea. But it's pitched as a kind of semi-permanent price drop.
That can roll out, pretty quickly across the globe. This is the thing, too. Like, do you guys care? Are you excited about the idea of fancy new foldables right now? Or is it like the lens and the hardware that's more...
Sure. You've used more foldables than me. What do you think on foldables?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm very excited for this because it's a foldable. I am definitely more intrigued by the liquid lens thing. It's new, it's interesting, mm-hmm. but I don't know how well it'll work. I actually do really want to test that out and see how it'll work. Mm-hmm. But foldables, am I going to use them soon? Am I going to splash extra money for them soon?
We should ask V, who splashed that money.
Did he splash his own money?
Yeah, he straight up did. Yeah, he did and buy
one.
A lot of my friends have.
What, the Z Fold 2?
The Z Fold 2, yeah.
Man, madness.
We pay him way too much.
See, we maybe do. I personally, I would totally go for a Z Flip. The smaller, the really Motorola style Z Flip. The Razer style one, but the Samsung one. So I'm not really... I'm not sold yet, but I think it speaks
volumes about both of us, Cher, because, we see these foldable phones kind of pass us by. Mm-hmm. I've never actively chased Samsung or Motorola for, mm-hmm. like, a review sample for them, because I don't care enough, I think. I think that's a bad sign. I saw, like, the Motorola one, which is probably one of the least good foldable phones. That's been heavily discounted in the UK recently, but it's still a lot of money for a phone that you can get, you can get better versions of elsewhere.
There's still too much of a premium right now. Dev, how about you? Do you think you're ever going to be interested in a foldable phone, or are you still on camp dual screen?
I mean, right now the foldables are just that. It is too expensive. I do feel like once we hit the threshold of $1,000 phones, I start to take a step back and be like, hey guys, what are we really doing here? Because the mid-range phones are so good. Even a lot of the low-end phones are so good. It was market pressure from Apple and other companies who just wanted to make more money, because all of a sudden their phones started to get a little boring, right? So they had to throw stuff in there, raise the prices, kind of get some flash. And I feel like we're in a more flash than substance, era of phones, and especially when it comes to dual screens. I would love one eventually, once the tech is reliable, once it works well. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think we actually have come to a really good part, a good spot where solid slabs of glass, we need to make the glass stronger. We need to make like phones with less moving parts, because those will last longer. So I care more about durability and value than, a phone that can flash open. Like, and honestly, I want to spend less time on my phone these days, so I don't want to like be encouraged to do more of that too. So, all these factors are coming into play here.
What phone are you currently on, Dev?
I have a 12 Pro right now, but the smaller one, not the Max.
Yeah. Look, I think we can get into a deeper conversation about foldable phones another episode, and I think that is our plan, so we will get there. I will say Xiaomi did unveil another phone that is right up my alley, the Xiaomi Mi 11 Ultra. It's got a triple camera system on the back, no liquid lens, but it also has a tiny 1.1-ish inch screen on the back.
Oh, I know
next
why you like
cameras.
It.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Because
I could put my face on it.
When you're taking a photo.
Wow, what happens to you during your selfie, Sherlyn? I'm terrified by this.
We're taking
your
photo,
selfie
you can
mode
see.
Is just horrifying. If you are listening on the audio podcast, please take a look at our video stream, because Sherlyn selfies are something else.
She does look different with glasses on.
Look a little bit different with my stubble, yeah. So the Mi 11 Ultra is Xiaomi's flagship range, so it has all of the stuff that you would expect. Snapdragon 888, 16 gigs of RAM, no folding screen, but decent, right? But this extra little dual screen can not only show you your viewfinder when you're taking a photo with the rear camera, it'll also show notifications when you have the phone face down on a table, for example. So like a sort of
just
take
turn
on
the
phone
up.
Phone.
Turn the phone up if you want notifications. You don't need another phone. You don't need another screen for that.
That's hilarious.
Oh my God.
I know. One last thing I will say that Xiaomi did talk about this week is the confirmed reports that it is going to go into the electric car business. So, yeah,
sure,
a few weeks ago it made the decision, yeah, to make electric. Why not, Xiaomi? You make electric
rice cookers. But also,
you make scooters.
Some great coverage of China's electric car business, and it is it's the biggest in the world. It's growing fast. There's tons of government subsidies. There was a great CNBC video, I think, recently about just how China's market is completely different because they can build the infrastructure quickly, right? And aren't they doing the things where it's like it's cheaper to buy an electric car because you normally have to pay a lot of extra title fees and things like that for a gas car, whereas those are waived if you buy an electric. So it's viable.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it is in China, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, that is news from Xiaomi Land for now. I wouldn't be surprised. Again, they're doing a lot. There's no news yet on whether they're selling those cars outside of the US. It's still very outside of China, sorry.
Yeah.
Still very early days, but we'll see.
We shall see. Let's move on to some other news. Listen, as usual, we're expecting an Apple event soon. I don't think we have not gotten confirmation of that, but we do expect something to happen in April. What do you guys expect to see from this event?
Matt, that's you.
Oh, guys. Oh, gender's a spectrum share. You can be a guy. It's totally cool.
It's true.
Yeah. This seems like the design and stuff. I can't quite place it. It looks like it's going to be those air tags and some kind of wireless charging stuff, at least from the aesthetic of the invite. But yeah, iPads, I guess that would probably be the first thing. We've also been hearing a lot of, you know, ruminations on, you know, more standard Macs coming with Apple's homemade chips and stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's revealing, you know, a new chip for more desktop-based PCs. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems like it might be quite a small one, so I don't want to get everyone's hopes too high. It could just be AirTags and stuff.
It could just be, but this is the timing for maybe new iPads. You know, like this is about when we see some of that stuff. So I've been kind of just eyeing iPad Pros for a while. So I'm going to sit tight and see what that is like. Yeah, I want a good, sleek typing device, but also with a higher refresh rate screen. What do you think, Cher?
Yeah, I'll say that like I've been talking to V about this a little bit, Chris Velasco, our Apple guy, and one of the things he also reiterates sometimes is that this is around the same time last year that they unveiled the iPhone SE. So maybe another small affordable phone. We'll see. I otherwise have no clue.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. Also, but yeah, you mentioned the desktop M1 chips too. I know at least 10 people within my friend group who are waiting for new iMacs, basically, right? And once they drop those M1 iMacs, I do feel like those things are going to be super popular. There is the constant AR glasses rumors that we're hearing about too, but that may be more like something for WWDC, where they announce the ones that developers can buy, because they need to start building apps for those too. Yeah.
Speaking of Apple, by the way, there's some other stuff that happened this week about from Apple land, I guess. Lots of lands. There's a new upcoming iOS update that will unblock the word Asian as adult content. So this is like a bit of background here. This was discovered sometime last year, I want to say. And what happens is when you enable screen time and you set it to limit adult websites, Apple used to prevent searches for things like browser apps and other like things it has control over, I guess. And it won't show results for the word Asian, along with some other keywords that seemed adult. But obviously, with everything that's going on in the world, in America especially, you can't just not show results for the word Asian.
It took like a major crisis for Apple to be like, hey, maybe this is bad. Oopsie.
Yeah. It's nice to see that update is coming, and we will see how that goes. But there is a lot of work more to be done here. A lot of some studying, I think, to do to see what else Apple blocks in that filter.
Okay, but
we're keeping an eye on it.
Also, why would you enable your own screen time filters to block porn? Like, you would do this for your kid, you know? But maybe, I don't know. It's your phone, you know?
Well, if you enabled it and you handed it off to a kid, right? Like on an iPad or something, and you had adult content limited, they couldn't search for Asian cartoons or something, I guess. Not very sure. So
yeah,
here we go.
Yeah. Let's move on to something just real quick that happened. Volkswagen. What do you guys think
it's
about?
It's April Fool's, y'all.
Volkswagen. The dumbest of the April Fool's story. Honestly, I actually didn't.
It's a good idea. Yeah. It's a good idea.
They should actually do it. So the story was this week that Volkswagen would be rebranding as Volkswagen as they like pushed into EVs and everything. It was actually an April Fool's joke that just like got leaked early, I guess. Like that's the deal. Yeah. But also, I don't hate it.
It feels like a really good kind of strong like...
commitment.
Commitment to the future and to kind of trying to rescue us before Waterworld happens. Like
for sure.
It sounds like a good thing to have done.
It sounds great, it turns out, guys, especially after Dieselgate, where we found out that Volkswagen was, you know, polluting the world and lying about it.
Yeah, literally not telling us the truth. Do you think you really should be dealing in April Fool's trickery when you're already dealing with a lack of trust? I don't know.
And let's not forget where Volkswagen started too, you know, so it's like it may actually be good to change your name and get away from your Nazi connections. Thank you very much. But anyway, that's April Fool's. Their shares dropped 3.7% yesterday after this news. So yeah, turns out
Found out the name change was fake, the share price dropped because everybody liked the fake name so much more.
You played yourself. So congratulations.
Also, like coming from the point of having to, I did both of these kind of Volkswagen.
Uh-huh.
Is it a rumor? Is it real? Kind of thing for the Morning Edition podcast, and it's really hard to enunciate to make them sound different.
Sure.
Volkswagen. If you're kind of blasting out your sentences, it's really hard to make it stand out. So
in America, a lot of people just always called it kind of Volkswagen too. That's kind of what it sounded like. So
yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, anyway, it just wouldn't have been. Anyway.
One quick other story that just dropped last night. Netflix is reportedly paying $450 million for two Knives Out sequels. And I'm just mentioning this because, first of all, that's a shit ton of money for two movies. But also, Knives Out was super popular, directed by...
It's a good show. I loved it.
It's a good movie. Directed by my boy, Rian Johnson. So this hasn't been fully confirmed yet, but it's been reported by both Variety and Deadline. Wow. Amazing news. I do kind of hope they still get a theatrical release. That's the thing that worries me whenever Netflix picks something up, because then it just gets bought and hidden within the algorithm, right? Whereas I remember seeing Knives Out in theaters, and that was so much fun. A ton of fun. A great theatrical experience. So I hope we still get to get that with the sequels.
I mean, I love the idea of also of having like this kind of detective series with, what's it called? Benoit Blanc or something,
Benoit Blanc.
Daniel Craig.
Doing like weird American
accents.
So
channeling his inner Foghorn Leghorn. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. Also, more love for Logan Lucky, where he channeled his like inner southern dude.
I watched that.
That movie's amazing. You should watch that movie. So also check out Logan Lucky if you all like Knives Out. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I'll just say I've been testing out something new and something different for me, the Toyota Sienna minivan, the 2021 version. I'm testing out one of the ultimate dad mobiles. I'm doing this because I am interested in exploring more about like what car tech is looking like, but also hybrids and EVs. The interesting thing about the Sienna is that the entire line is hybrids this year. There is no choice. It's not like a premium upgrade. And I do think that is a big push from Toyota to say like, hey, we forget about recalling ourselves, you know, Volkswagen. You know, this is a commitment to better mileage, reducing carbon emissions and things like that. This thing gets 35 miles per gallon in the US. That is more than my much, much smaller 2017 RAV4 hybrid, which gets like 32 miles per gallon. A typical minivan like this, if it was just gas, maybe would have a V6 engine, would be like 21, 22 miles per gallon. So a significant jump there. And it's pretty cool so far. I'm really digging it. I'm trying to figure out how we will cover this. But yeah, it is a good dad mobile. As soon as I put my daughter, Sophia, in it, in her car seat, she was like, wow, I like this car. So that's...
your daughter turned to you and said,
"You gotta buy it now."
She turned to you and said, thanks, daddy, for saving the environment.
Thank you. I give it 90%. Like, she's already rating gadgets and everything. Like, she's judging things. Like, she'll tell me how much she likes something.
I wonder that from.
I love it. Like, she has instant reactions. She's very critical towards movies. So I dig it. I don't know where all that comes from. Sherlyn, what have you been working on?
Finally, getting that review up was really nice. And then a bunch of embargoes out too was also nice. But I'm still getting out of my writer's block zone and finally making some headway, which feels good. I talked to manager about it and found some ways to help myself feel better. So there you go. You will see that stuff coming soon. I swear, I hope so.
You gotta take some breaks, Sherlyn. Take some, go out and take some selfies, you know?
I'm trying to. Well, I do that every day. But yes. Matt, what are you working on?
I'm working on getting more work put on Sherlyn's plate.
God, I hate you.
But after that's sorted, I'm testing out a new controller from 8BitDo. They've recently announced Pro 2. That's under embargo, but it's already been announced, so I can talk to it about it a little bit. But that's a very nice little upgrade. I can use it with Stadia. I can use it with my Mac. Annoyingly, it doesn't work with iOS, so it's not perfect. But it works with Android phones if you are looking for a nice gaming upgrade, and it's quite reasonably priced. But anyway, stay tuned to read about it. The other thing I'm playing with, and this is why my video is quite decent quality.
It's much better than normal.
Yeah. So this is the Sony. This is the Sony ZV-10, which is quite an old now, like a camera dedicated for video blogging. And so I'm testing it out because I have no camera skills. I have to do a fair amount of videos these days and no one to help me do it. So I'm using this to kind of improve my game. And it's wonderful. It's it's almost idiot proof, which is crucial.
Matt proof,
yeah. It's coming on the box. But yeah, it's really good. It's really smooth. This is a review sample I got from Sony. Unfortunately, some of the buttons are a bit sticky, so I'm hoping they'll send me a new one before I actually write something about it. But yeah, I'm super impressed. I'm really hoping they'll make a ZV2, and I'll literally buy that with my own money.
ZV-10-2, ZV-10-2, ZV-ZV-20.
All I want is a liquid lens inside it. That's all I'm looking for. But yeah, that's pretty exciting. So I'm going to be writing about that as well. But yeah, I'm actually barreling into Easter holidays. So I've got a few days off coming up. So that's exciting.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to enjoy when we all take some time off, right? Devendra, I'm going to tell you what I've been doing.
Sure.
trying to make myself feel better in the midst of all this mental burnout.
So for your pop culture picks, we are moving on to pop culture
exactly.
picks.
Yes, exactly. We're moving on to pop culture picks. And I've been watching a lot of good stuff. I'm just seeing what one of Devendra's recommendations is going to be, and I fully agree. But surprisingly have done a lot of interesting stuff these last few days. One of which, I'm going to start with this because I actually already told Matt about it and we've already played this, but it's a game called Kitty Litter. Letter. Uh-huh. It's created by the artist who's behind web series or webcomic, The Oatmeal.
Yeah, The Oatmeal
and
guy.
And it's... He also made a game called Exploding Kittens a while back. So basically, this is a word game that is Boggle style. You basically unscramble words or you make words out of a longish word. And each word that you create generates a bunch of exploding kittens that head towards your enemy's house. And your goal is to take down your enemies with exploding kittens. And you can play story mode. You can play multiplayer versus mode, which Matt and I have done. You can also play single player endless. And I play the story. The story mode is so awesome because it's The Oatmeal's humor in a story about exploding kittens versus an angry neighbor. And it's pretty awesome. I really enjoyed it. The story was just hilarious. If you like The Oatmeal's comics, you will love the story mode. And then, you know, take on your friends afterwards. Matt and I struggled a little bit with the server the first time we tried, I think.
Yeah.
But Matt, did you like the game?
I did like it, but I kind of went in blind and then Cher just kind of thrashed me again.
Bulldozed
and again.
That's why we don't play games with Sherlyn. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to play Among Us with her just so I can murder her. And I don't think that's healthy.
No, she will only ever murder you and lie about it. Yeah.
Yeah, seems about right.
Oh, no.
Is that it for your pop culture stuff, Cher?
I have a second recommendation, and that's my last one, which is a new show that I've been talking to a few people about to call Marriage or Mortgage on Netflix.
Why?
It's kind of amazing.
Yes.
It's kind of amazing. Don't say why. It's every episode, every other episode I've like sobbed. It's been very moving. I always think as a person who was brought up by parents who are very financially savvy, that the question, it would be no question. It would always be mortgage. But no, there's some.
What is the key question? What do they mean by marriage?
So marriage or mortgage is a 10-episode series on Netflix right now. Every episode, there's a couple that's questioning. They have some money and they want to put it towards either a mortgage or a wedding. Mm-hmm. And this pair of it's a house. It's a real estate agent and a wedding planner. They're this pair of women in Nashville, and they come up with like a good pitch for each case. So either they find them the perfect house for their budget, or they put together a really wonderful wedding. It's amazing. I hate my friend Sam Rutherford for introducing this to me, but I got hooked and I finished all of it. I cried through all of it. It was really great.
What makes it emotionally triggering?
It's a So if you like anything that like is gorgeous aesthetic, like I do, like house. If you like house renovation shows, you will like parts of this. There's a lot of that. There's the wedding planning part of it is very moving. But what makes it emotionally triggering is how, because they both have to kind of win the client over, right? They both pull out all the stops. So they're like, oh, your dad passed away, so he can't be a part of your wedding. Let's do a memorial tribute to him. So like she sets it up and you see this person crying. Or this other person, when they finally find their dream house, they're like, you know, my grandparent who passed away would really want me to have this house. And they start crying too. So it's like it gets emotional like that. But yeah, I mean, gosh, it's a nice show. It's really, really nice.
Sounds like a nice show, but I hope it dives into just how insane the marriage industrial complex is in America. Yeah. I have some friends who just
It's really expensive.
They save like tens of thousands of dollars by just eloping, right? It's and when insane. My wife and I got married, it's crazy over here. I don't know what it's like in the UK.
It's not as bad, but it's getting there. Like, and it depends on the people as well. Like some people
definitely. Yeah, set aside your personal like issues. I would never spend that much money on a wedding, I don't think. Gosh, I might have to eat my words. But you know, watch it
How
for
presumptive
learning.
Of you, Cher, to think you're ever going to get married.
I know, right?
I take that back.
Damn!
You might have to eat your
words.
Damn! All right.
Let's move
Dev, on. What are you going to recommend?
I want to ask Matt, actually, because he seems like he's on a roll. What are your pop culture picks?
Yes.
So this is a series that's been running on YouTube for years, and I've only just kind of come across it, and now I'm addicted. It's hosted by two drag queens, Trixie Mattel and Katya, who were both made famous through RuPaul's Drag Race, and now they're famous in their own rights. But anyway, the series is just called, and that's how they say it, obviously. How do you Google it? It's UN and then three H's. You should find it. It's like hugely popular, millions of views, and it's just a really dumb, edited together, two drag queens talking about anything series, where it's just kind of got layers upon layers of like graphics and video effects and sound effects. And who like these the people who are behind the editing it are just geniuses. It feels Adult Swimmy. It feels a bit kind of like very old, like early noughties web animation, that kind of thing. But it's just so
chaotic
smartly
media.
Chaotic and just like so funny, and just the sound effects they put on these things and these kind of running jokes they make that have no grounding as to why they should be funny but just are. And it just kind of speaks to kind of the personality and the charm of these two drag queens. And I think there's almost like 150 episodes, so I'm just kind of trying to slowly pad through it, but yeah, so much fun and such a great kind of tonic at this point where I'm just itching to leave my house and I'm miserable about every other facet of my life, and now I can just distract myself with two dramas, drag queens, and just think about why my life went wrong.
Love it. Love it. Anything else, Matt?
What else am I getting into at the moment? So I've kind of dusted off my PlayStation VR headset. There's been a bunch of games that have come free on, I'm not sure what it's called, Sony's like Play at Home PlayStation free game bonanza, and that's included Rez. But I ponied up some money for Tetris Effect, which is wonderful in
VR. It's fun,
very very relaxing, and then I'm gonna just try and be brave and play Resident Evil 7 in VR.
Oh buddy.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah, I wanna try that.
But I think I might just cry.
That sounds a little too scary. I'll just mention a couple things quickly. I finished up Search Party up to season 4, which is all on HBO Max right now. This is one of the best shows that exists on TV. So if you like Breaking Bad, if you like fun comedy that can get kind of dark sometimes, but is also a really smart mystery and is really character focused, check out Search Party. I love it so much. I think Alia Shawkat, if you only know her from Arrested Development, it is a trip to see her here in the show be just like an utter queen. Like, she is just doing some tremendous acting work. So everybody watch Search Party. I promise you will love it. I rewatched the 2014 Godzilla movie directed by Gareth Edwards, which I remember I reviewed this back at the time. I saw it in theaters. It was a good looking movie, but watching it now, I'm like, it is a great looking movie. You know, like, I do love how every aspect of it is like very artfully composed. Not the best script in the world. You know, it's kind of messy, but I do think Gareth Edwards just has a good eye. We saw that again in Rogue One. So it is worth rewatching. You probably don't need to rewatch Godzilla King of the Monsters, the second movie in this new trilogy, Godzilla versus Kong. Like, I know characters reappear, but King of the Monsters was just awful. Like, it had very little redeeming things to it. So I plan to be watching Godzilla versus Kong, you know, this weekend.
I still liked King of the Monsters, if only for Mothra. If just for Mothra.
Mothra's great. I love Mothra, but... Yeah, rewatch. If you're planning to see Godzilla versus Kong, also be sure to check out Kong Skull Island, which is a ton of fun. And I feel like most people just haven't talked about it. And one quick shout out this week to Bad Trip on Netflix, which is the Eric Andre movie.
Oh, yes.
Talk about chaos. Talk about pure chaos. It is one of the funniest things I have ever seen. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm just tell you all to watch it. Do not watch it with your kids. Do not watch it with your parents. But it is hilarious. I think you will all enjoy it. So check that out. So that's it for this week on the Engadget Podcast. Thank you for joining us, everybody. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find me online at Devendra, and I also podcast about movies and TV at /filmcast@filmcast.com. Where can we find you, Sherlyn?
If you want to send me cute pictures of babies and animals for my smart display that are totally PG-13, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter.
Excellent. And Matt?
You can find me on Twitter at ThatMattSmith. That's one T in Matt, and then the rest is how you think it'd be spelled. And I'm on all the other ones, but my handles are never very easy to say on podcasts, so I don't. But yes, if you search around, you can find me on Instagram.
Fine. It's not like Matt Smiths are hard to find online, so good luck with that. Find the right one. You can always email us at podcastengadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, please, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. Thanks, folks. We're out.
Nice.